Which Way LA is made possible in part by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation, which supports study and research into policy issues of the Los Angeles region.
The fire's not out yet, and there may be more to come. Hello again, I'm Omar Nalny, and this is Which Way LA, KCRW's ongoing series on the issues Southern Californians care about. The Griffith Observatory, the Greek Theater, the LA Zoo, and the Gene Autry Museum were among the features of Griffith Park threatened by fire. It won't be fully contained till tomorrow, and then only if all goes well. 300 evacuated Los Feliz residents have been allowed to return home, but the park is closed at least through tomorrow. Tonight, we'll hear about the fire and the aftermath. What about surviving wildlife? What about the immediate future in an early fire season after a winter of record low rainfall? First, here's the news. We're only back with Which Way LA on KCRW. The Griffith Park fire has burned 817 acres in the Hollywood Hills, making it the biggest fire in Los Angeles since 1961. Fire officials say it may have been started by a 23-year-old homeless man who fell asleep smoking a cigarette. He's being treated for second and third degree burns, and there may be arson charges. Fire officials say the fire itself is now 50% contained and that full control could take till well into tomorrow. Mayor Villaraigosa held a news conference this afternoon at the Greek Theater, where performances have been canceled at least through tomorrow night.
Conditions are extremely dry, and wind conditions are a major factor. The winds remain in our favor. We're hopeful that we'll have full containment within 24 hours. But we're not letting our guard down. Our firefighters are doing an outstanding job, a heroic job here. If the winds turn against us, we're prepared to do whatever it takes to protect life and property.
Mayor Villaraigosa at the Greek Theater this afternoon. Some 300 people were evacuated last night from endangered homes, but 25 refused to go. The mayor and the police chief, William Bratton, said in the future they will demand compliance because stragglers endanger police and firefighters as well as themselves. In the meantime, here's Chief Bratton.
Only residents will be allowed into the affected areas where the home evacuations occurred. They will have to show identification. We are strongly discouraging anybody from coming into this area for sightseeing purposes. You will not be allowed into the area. As is indicated, the park is closed, and the venue here at the Greek Theater has been canceled.
The park is closed. The Greek Theater events have been canceled. Obviously, the observatory is closed and other attractions in the park, including the zoo as well. City Councilman Tom Labange represents the area surrounding Griffith Park, and he knows the park intimately. He said Dante's View, a favorite oasis for hikers, has been destroyed, but he promised that it will be rebuilt.
Where last night you would have seen the 300-plus firefighters on these trails, you usually see 300 Sierra Club hikers. They will come back. We'll rebuild this park. It's been unfortunate. We got to hope the winds don't come up this afternoon, though.
Once again, Tom Labange, councilman for the area. Fire officials again say the fire should be fully contained by sometime tomorrow afternoon. But as you heard, they are not ruling out more trouble if winds pick up again. Bernadette Soter is chair of the Parks, River, and Open Space Committee for the Greater Griffith Park Neighborhood Council. Her home is just two doors from the park, and it was one that was evacuated. Bernadette Soter, welcome to our program.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us about that experience.
Well, it was very frightening. About 6 o'clock we came home, and it seemed as if the fire was non-threatening. And by about 6:45, the sky had turned orange, and we could actually see sheets of flame from our window. Smoke was everywhere. People were all on the street, running out of their houses, trying to gauge what was going on. And we had emergency vehicles going back and forth and a lot of aircraft overhead. It told us we'd better start packing, and we did.
Now, you mean what you saw told you, or no officials told you at that point?
The officials didn't tell us at that point, but they were very prompt with their evacuation order. Within 15 minutes, they, too, told us that we should begin leaving the area, and we did.
Now, again, you're just two doors away from the park in the Los Feliz area. How close did the flames get to your home?
I think the flames got within 200 feet of our home.
And was that up a hill from you, or
yes.
How would you describe the space between your house and the flames?
There's one home before us in the park, and after that, there's a spot of wilderness. After that is the municipal nursery, and the golf course is on the left. The municipal nursery was partially engaged, and the hill I'm talking about has been burned. It got very close, and the firefighters were very heroic in saving our homes.
Could you feel the heat?
Absolutely. That was one of the things that alerted us that we'd better start paying attention to what was going on. The temperature, the ambient temperature suddenly rose dramatically.
Do you have children?
No, I don't. I have two dogs.
How did the dogs handle it? And I presume you took them with you.
Yes, the dogs were put in the car immediately and driven over to doggy daycare.
Where did you spend the night?
We spent the night at a neighbor's house who lives south of Los Feliz, and she took in another couple that was evacuated from Vermont.
Did you see anybody in your neighborhood that refused to be evacuated?
No, I didn't see anyone, but I did meet a woman whose husband was remaining in their house on Aberdeen. He refused to leave.
And how did she explain that?
She was not very happy about it. She was also visiting with the neighbor that we spent the night with. She was not happy about it, but apparently he is not movable once he makes up his mind, and that's the way it went.
So I presume that he was trying to save his house? Was he going to squirt water on it, or was he just staying there because he was too stubborn to leave?
The latter is probably the case from the way they were talking, that he just felt it was his home, it was his piece of land, and that's where he was staying.
Bernadette Soder, once again, with the Neighborhood Council in the Griffith Park area. We'll come back to you. I want to talk more about the future of Griffith Park with you and others as well. In the meantime, in the aftermath of any such fire, there are concerns, of course, about surviving wildlife. In the midst of an urban area, residents could be faced with questions about what to do. Greg Randall is a student of wildlife. He works with the L.A. Department of Animal Services, a man in great demand today. And Greg Randall, thanks very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
What sorts of animals do you think people might expect to see in the surrounding neighborhoods that they normally don't see?
Well, we have a lot of different types of wildlife that inhabit Griffith Park, including coyotes, bobcats, deer, possums, skunks, raccoons. We've got birds of prey, of course, rodents, the occasional mountain lion, although not that common. Any one of these animals are often driven out of the fires into people's neighborhoods.
Mountain lions in Griffith Park?
There's been one that's been sighted. It hasn't been any recent sightings of this animal, so we don't really think that it's there right now. He tends to travel great distances. But, you know, the more common being the bobcats or the coyotes, actually, the most, and the other smaller mammals. Whenever there's a fire, they're going to be pushed out, and this fire is of such a magnitude that people may be coming home from work today or this evening and find that they might have an unusual visitor in their backyard.
What might be the mood of that visitor at the time when they're pushed out? How do animals respond, and how long does it take them to get over what must be, for them, a very traumatizing experience?
It is very traumatizing. It's quite frightening for them. They may be there trying to calm down from the situation, trying to regather themselves. They're confused. We are asking that people kind of give them some space to allow them to recuperate from the situation. Obviously, if the animal is burned or shows injuries in some ways, we do want them to call us. If it's an orphaned animal, we want them to call us, too. We have wildlife rehabbers that can help us get those animals to care. They work with wildlife veterinarians. But, you know, for the numbers of animals that may be showing up in different parts of the area that's peripheral to Griffith Park, there's no way the department could respond to every sighting of every single animal that's out there. So we're asking, you know, the public to please try and err on the side of caution. Do not approach the animal. Keep their pets inside if they can bear with it. Just allow the animal to stay there and to calm down. When the smoke is completely dissipated and things start to return to normal, a lot of these animals will go back into Griffith Park to see what's left there for them.
When you say don't approach the animal, what if it appears to be badly burned or injured? Should you then make any effort at all to try to help it, or let the animal control officers do the job?
Let the experts do the job. They can contact our department, the local shelter, for assistance on that situation. We'd rather have them not try and touch the animal. I know that a lot of people have the desire to go over and approach it. I'd rather that they keep an eye on the animal in case it starts to move off, so when the officer gets there, they can help the animal along. And our department does not have a tremendous amount of officers to respond to these situations. They have other calls for vicious dogs and so forth. So it may be a time before they get there. So it's very important that they do keep an eye on that animal and be patient that there will be someone coming if the animal is injured or orphaned.
People tend to be very sympathetic toward animals. If you see a coyote or a bobcat or a deer and you have the impulse to go and give it some help, how much damage potentially can an animal like that do?
Well, if you actually are approaching an animal with the intent to try and feed it, for example, you can actually bring about a situation possibly by trying to hold out food, although the animal may not intend to bite you, a finger could be nipped. Coyotes don't view us as food, but they do know that humans have access to food because they see us all the time with it, so they will often be very curious about it. It's actually the worst thing you can do is feed a wild animal. It takes away their natural fear of humans, and we want them to keep that basic fear. It keeps them safe from us and vice versa. And it's just, you know, we don't have a lot of attacks from wildlife on humans. I think there's been less than 200 attacks by coyotes on humans in the history of California.
What about bobcats?
Bobcat attacks on humans are virtually unknown. There's been two that I know of in the United States ever in history. So they're very frightened of us. They're easily scared off. Again, not looking at us as food. Their staple food item is small rodents.
And deer, can you get kicked or bitten by a deer?
Out of all the animals, deer can be the most dangerous. 150 people a year lose their life to deer across the United States. They do view us as a dangerous predator to them. That's what the human is to deer, so do not approach them. They're not Bambi. This is an animal that's very protective. You want to keep a distance. You know, call for assistance. Most of the time, the deer will go on its own. Sometimes they get trapped in the backyard, and they need a little help with us coming and opening a gate or possibly even in some cases removing a section of fence if they can't get out so that they can be let free. And sometimes we involve the fire department to help us with that.
And you mentioned birds of prey. What about them?
Birds of prey, hawks and owls, a lot of these animals have their nests at this time of year, so there's going to be a very serious effect on the species of owls and the hawks that live within Griffith Park. They may show up singed, have burned feathers in people's backyards. We do, like I said, we do have the wildlife rehabbers that we can get those to. They're very successful at getting those animals put back out into the wild after treating them. We do not want people to touch them. They can actually injure you with their talons. That's more dangerous than the beak, actually, when it comes to an owl or a hawk. So, again, that's one of those things where if people see something like that down in their backyard, call us. We'll get an officer out there for that.
And final question. You said to call if an animal is orphaned. What do you mean by that? How do you know that an animal is orphaned?
Well, this time of year, everything, coyotes and the raccoons and so forth, they all have their babies about this time of year. So you might see an animal like a coyote puppy that looks like a small dog, maybe about 2 months old at this most right now. And it'll be looking very confused. Same thing with the smaller animals. Maybe a possum might look like a small rat, or you might have some small raccoons that might be wandering around in your yard lost at this time. That's an orphan baby animal. It's going to be pretty heavy this time of year when I say orphans, there's a lot of them because of the fact that a lot of the parents fled from the fires. And they don't have time to go back and retrieve orphans from the den. So if the parents didn't make it, the ones that are able to walk on their own may end up in some of our properties.
And even they, you should stay away from?
Yeah. I mean, the likelihood of one of those injuring you is very minute, but handling them can actually cause them a lot of stress. So it's preferred that the person just keeps an eye on it until an officer can get there or a wildlife professional.
Well, Greg Randall, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Wildlife expert with the Los Angeles Department of Animal Services. Back to Bernadette Sutter with the Neighborhood Council in the greater Griffith Park area. Once again, she's also with the Parks, River, and Open Space Committee for that area. And you're very interested, I know, in Griffith Park itself, and you'll be interested in the reconstruction or rehabilitation of the park. What kinds of concerns do you have right now?
Well, we have a number of concerns. First of all, we'd like to try to begin to understand how we might be able to prevent a repeat of this fire since we're at the very, very beginning of fire season and 20% of the park has burned. We still have roughly 3,300 acres of the park that were not touched, but they're just as dry and prone to turning into a conflagration as the part that has burned.
Should point
so
out that there was a fire just a couple of weeks ago in the park as well.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Seems to be a pattern of arson going on in the park, and then there's also accidental fire. So what should we do now that we're going to have a very intense fire season? So that would be one question. The other question would be, how do we repair the damage to the natural ecosystems that has occurred on the 825 acres that were burned? No structures were burned. Therefore, we're talking about wildlife habitat and the natural beauty of the park that was damaged. Can it be repaired? Can it be restored? Could he possibly seat a panel of advisors, zoologists, but botanists, experts on our ecosystems, to help the Recreation and Parks Department in the city come up with a strategy to make sure these areas are reseeded correctly and that these ecosystems are restored? And then the third thing is, going forward, we're looking toward planning for the park. How do we take the information we've derived from the fire? How do we plan responsibly for the park to make sure that fire safety is a component in every decision that's made, and that park preservation is a component in every decision that is made?
Bernadette Sutter, once again, with the Greater Griffith Park Neighborhood Council. I'll come back to you in a moment. First, let me just remind people, Mayor Villaraigosa is warning everybody in L.A. to clear the brush, around their houses and prepare for the worst. City officials are blaming this fire principally on humidity of less than 2% after the driest rainy season on record. Richard Minnick says there is more to it than that. He may have some answers, too, for Bernadette Soder. Richard Minnick is a fire ecologist and professor of earth sciences at UC Riverside. Professor, good to have you with us.
Good to be here.
Take up where I left off there. If there's more to this than just a dry rainy season and low humidity, what should people be concerned about the most?
Well, it depends on what kind of vegetation you're working with. If it's chaparral, the flammability of it depends on the accumulation of fuel over decades, not how much it grows or how much it's stressed by 1 year's deficiency of rainfall. And so I was looking at the video of this fire, and it's pretty mature-looking chaparral, and it's ready to burn. And that's the nature of the beast with this kind of vegetation. It's the old stands that burn, those that areas that haven't burned in a long time, and not the young ones. And drought really doesn't have the specific relationship to the occurrence of fires, other than to lengthen the individual fire season, which started a little early this year.
So, in other words, it isn't so much that it's drier than usual, it's that there's more fuel than usual it would burn under any circumstances?
Well, there was sufficient fuel for a fire to take off. And once chaparral gets 30 to 40 years of age throughout Southern California, you have a big fire threat. And on the positive side, those areas which are grassy hardly had any growth at all, so the fire hazard is far less than usual this year.
Now, what about growth that is not natural to the area? There's eucalyptus there. There's pine trees in Griffith Park. People love those aspects of the park. But how much do they contribute to the problem?
Well, it was interesting watching the video last night, how much eucalyptus and pine trees, European pine trees, I think, were contributing to the fire. And they did in 2003 as well. The Scripps Ranch fire, eucalyptus was a major player, and also in San Bernardino in 2003. So if we're going to be planting large trees, which host a lot of fuel in wildlands, I don't think it's a good idea unless we know they're going to be irrigated heavily.
So you'd have to irrigate them. Would you also have to try to keep the chaparral away from them?
Well, I think in this case the primary fuel was the chaparral itself, and so the management really should focus on the chaparral. And it'll come back very well. I'm not particularly concerned that we need to seed anything. The chaparral resprouts, or it has a huge bed of seed in the ground ready for the next growing season. Seeding the park is actually not going to change things. It'll come back like it always has for millions of years.
Again, Richard Minnick is with the Department of Earth Sciences at UC Riverside. Back to Bernadette Soder. This would appear to answer some of the questions that you raised before, but would you want to replant eucalyptus and replant European pines because they are so attractive as parts of the park?
Well, I think that on cultivated picnic grounds, perhaps they have a place, but I think in the wild and natural areas of the park, the natural species should take precedence over all other plantings. I'm glad to hear the professor say that the burned areas already have the seeds of their own recovery in them. That's very good news. So I guess what we really have to do is stay out of the way, and that'll be something that the community and people who care about Griffith Park should make sure happens, that we allow nature to take care of herself and restore herself in Griffith Park, that we, I guess, be careful where we walk, be careful where we place things, and give nature a chance.
Do you think there will be people, though, who like those trees, the old eucalyptus that have been around for a long time, the pines, some of them have gotten quite tall in that area. Will there be pressure, do you think, to replant them and perhaps irrigate them, as Richard Minnick suggests you'd have to do?
Well, I think that there's a greater knowledge coming now that people understand that maybe native oaks and native trees are a better idea. The problem with eucalyptus is it's prone to disease. And there were some old-growth eucalyptus in Griffith Park that were very beautiful, but then they were infested by a eucalyptus blight and died. So they have their limitations, too, as shade trees. So perhaps what we need to do is come up with a plan for trees in Griffith Park that will satisfy people who like beautiful, shady, and traditional-looking trees, but also deal with the identity of Griffith Park and the chaparral in which it is. That is at the eastern end of the Santa Monica Mountains. It's part of a great ecosystem, so we need to recognize that and live within that.
Richard Minnick, Professor Minnick, your message seems to be heard by Bernadette Soder. What about the rest of the summer, the rest of this fire season? As she pointed out, there's a lot of the park, 80% of it, that has not been burned. Is it your understanding that there's still plenty of fuel there, and is this something we need to be very watchful about?
Well, first of all, we need to look at the flip side, and that is there's 800 acres of Griffith Park which have just burned, and that's the good news. There's no fuel there, and those areas are unlikely to burn for years, if not decades, to come. And the answer to the main question here is how old is the chaparral in other parts of Griffith Park? And if there have been fires there in recent time, then those areas are unlikely to reburn again. But in those areas which are really old, yeah, that's where the threat lies.
So, Ms. Soder, back to you. It's my understanding there hasn't been a really major fire in Griffith Park for several decades. When you're suggesting to people that they be careful in the park, you've got an important point to make.
Right. And I think perhaps what the professor is suggesting is I listed the types of advisors perhaps the park should retain to talk to them about fire and fire suppression. Perhaps we need a fire ecologist included in that group.
Well, we've got one on the program, and I don't know if he's available or not, but you can make contact with him. Tell us a bit, Bernadette Soder. Again, you live just two doors away from the park, and you're with the neighborhood council. How important is this park to people?
Oh, gosh. I think in Los Angeles now, it's slowly evolving into our Yosemite. We're in a situation now where it's, as people who travel the freeways and roads know, you have to invest a great deal of time into getting out of town. It used to be you could dash to the beach or you could dash to the San Bernardino Mountains or go up the coast, you know, go to San Francisco and back. That's getting more and more difficult as more and more people come into California and congest our roads. So people are looking for closer-in experiences with nature. Griffith Park can be that close-in experience with nature, as well as the other regional parks in our city parks. And I think that aspect of Griffith Park is starting to become more valuable to people as the years go by. At one time, I think Griffith Park's greatest value was the zoo was there, or the observatory was there, or the Greek Theater was there. Now we're realizing that the entire setting of Griffith Park is a wonderful jewel and that it's something that we need to protect and preserve because it's our kids' nature experience.
Have you been home since the evacuation and people were allowed back?
Yes, I went in for 15 minutes this morning.
What did you see in the park itself that is different now from what it used to look like before the fire?
Well, I have to be frank with you. The park looks like a wasteland now, the areas that have burned. It has an eerie, surreal, almost lunar landscape look to it. Twisted wrecks of former trees, gray ash everywhere, and there's a light powder of ash falling through the sky. Previously, we had green and brown and tans and all kinds of colors in the chaparral with the oak tree canopy. We had berries occasionally at certain times of year. We're not going to see that for a while. It's going to be 4 or 5 years, I guess, before we're going to get the true beauty of the chaparral. So my concern would be that we allow the chaparral to reforest itself.
Professor Minnick, what about the people that live in Bel Air, where there was an enormous fire in 1961, and Laurel Canyon, where there have been fires as well? Are those people at risk now? Has the chaparral, the fuel, built up in those places too?
Yeah, the Bel Air fire was in 1961, and as a kid I remember it, and that means that the chaparral in that part of the Santa Monica Mountains is now 45 years old and certainly of sufficient maturity and age to carry a major fire through it. Likewise with Laurel Canyon and Topanga Canyon. There are many areas nearby Los Angeles where the chaparral has really reached maturity and flammability. And the critical thing here is that it's not so much this year being so dry that's making it flammable. It's the fact that the vegetation has had decades to build up fuel. That's far more significant.
So again, as the mayor is saying, as the fire officials are saying, clear the brush from around your house, I guess, is the first lesson of this day.
It's the first lesson, and again, for those who've had the fires recently, either in the last few days or if they had in the neighborhood of the fires in 2003, the flip side is they don't have heavy mature fuel, and they actually have years, if not a couple of decades, before the next fire will come, and you have that time to mitigate against the fire threat.
All right. Just don't plant any pines or eucalyptus. Richard Minnick, professor at UC Riverside, a fire ecologist, thanks so much for being with us. And thanks also to Bernadette Soder with the Neighborhood Council in the greater Griffith Park area, as well as Greg Randall. We were glad to have him with us, the wildlife expert with the L.A. Department of Animal Services. Thanks again to all of you for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Which Way LA, produced tonight by Katie Cooper and Christian Bordahl. Our technical director is Mike Newport. I'm Warman Alney. Join us again for Which Way LA on 89.9 KCRW.
Which Way LA is made possible in part by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation, which supports study and research into policy issues of the Los Angeles region.